The UT Opera Theatre is putting together an opera that is very rarely performed today, Claudio Monteverdi's Ulysses, which is based on Homer's Odyssey. Performances are Friday, November 11th at 8 p.m. and Sunday, November 13th at both 2:30 and 8 p.m. All performances will be held in the Carousel Theatre, located on the UT campus next to the Clarence Brown Theatre. The production is directed by James Marvel and is musically directed by conductor Kevin Klass, who is here in the studio today to talk with me. Welcome back, Kevin. It seems it was only yesterday that you were here talking about your performance with the Knoxville Chamber Orchestra.
Thank you for having me back.
This opera is not performed very frequently today. First of all, why is that? And secondly, why did the UT Opera Theater decide on this piece?
Well, you're right. It's not the most common work that we could have pulled out for a production. But I would argue that it's performed more today than it ever was before, and I think for a variety of reasons. First of all, the work was largely unknown for a very long time. It was discovered only in the 19th century in a manuscript form that in a library in Vienna. And after its discovery, it had a very interesting history in that it really wasn't until maybe the 1950s that musicologists were willing to sign off on it as an actual work by Monteverdi. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is that the manuscript, that's the only version that exists that we know of, and it's not even in Monteverdi's hand. So early on, musicologists were looking at this and thinking, well, it doesn't really seem that much like Monteverdi or what we would expect and X, Y, and Z. And so there was a large reluctance to necessarily accept it as a legitimate or genuine work by Monteverdi. So it took some time to get some traction. The other operas that are known by Monteverdi, much more famous, L'Orfeo and, of course, L'Incoronazione di Poppea, which is performed quite a bit. And so, yeah, it's taken a while for Ulysses to gain some traction, but there have been some notable productions in the last couple decades and some fantastic recordings that are done, so it's getting there. It's coming into its own. But you're right, of the three surviving operas by Monteverdi, it's still the underdog. And so why did we choose to do it? Well, we've been wanting to do a Baroque opera or something, you know, a little earlier than Mozart for quite some time. But one of the reasons why the timing seemed right for it was that we knew for our fall production this year we would have to produce in the Carousel Theater on the UT campus. Mm-hmm. And we've felt for a long time that we've done operas in there before, but there are some challenges to being in there if we want to do a bigger, more standard opera, mm-hmm. Mozart or Puccini or things like this, which we've done in there, mm-hmm. and with some success, but there are real constraints. Space is the primary thing. So I'd said if we were going to go back into the Carousel Theater, we should do a Baroque opera. And we were thinking more like Handel, mm-hmm. for example. But James Marvel has staged Ulysses before and was eager to do that again. And I thought, well, we've never considered anything as early as Monteverdi. I've always had an interest in Monteverdi, but granted, my expertise, for lack of a better word, doesn't go back quite that far in terms of early music, so I kept my foot on the brake for quite a while, and then eventually I was persuaded that, okay, no fear, we're just going to jump in the pool without water wings and see where this takes us. So we decided in the spring it was time to do that.
One of the advantages of choosing this opera, I would assume, would be that it demands a large cast, so it gives a lot of students opportunities to be on the stage.
That's very true, and that was a major factor in our also determining to do this opera. In choosing to do any opera, we're looking at how can we give the most opportunities to the most students. So we do look for things that have a large enough cast and specifically have the right voices that match those of the students that we have either in the program or coming into the program. So, yeah, it has a very large cast, so there was something to go around for everybody involved in the program, which isn't always the case. So that's one great advantage. It poses certain challenges in that when you have a cast that's that large, it makes the preparation process a lot more complicated since we have kind of a bare-bones staff at times. So it means more work for us sort of on the front edge of things, but ultimately it's about giving students the best experiences and opportunities that they can while they're here, and so it's wonderful to have a vehicle like this.
With this large cast, are many of these roles solo roles, or are they more like choral roles?
There actually is only a very small choral section in this piece. I think you hear them for about all of 2 minutes
The
entire opera. So no, they're all really solo roles. There are a few ensembles that happen, but for the most part, just the nature of this kind of music and this work in particular, you would really say everything is a solo role.
Ulysses presents many challenges musically. The biggest challenge may have been for you. I understand that a full score does not exist, and so you essentially had to write out the orchestra parts yourself.
That's very true, and that was one of the reasons why I had kept my foot on the brake for a while. Yeah, one of the challenges with this type of music, or music from this period, is that it was not the custom, the expectation, that a composer, in this case Monteverdi, would write out a full score with full orchestration that you just sort of sit down and reproduce.
Mm-hmm.
You have to remember that all instrumentalists, for example, in that day were themselves composers and trained in the art of improvisation, and that also productions changed from venue to venue. So if it was performed in Venice, as this one was, and then moves to Florence or another city, in terms of the orchestra, you use whatever instruments just happen to be at your disposal or whichever instrumentalists you could pull in. So performances, even in terms of what the orchestration was, this would vary greatly from production to production. Now, that was kind of the norm of how operas were done. And then with this one opera in particular, as I mentioned, the only version that comes down to us is this manuscript in another, presumably a copyist's hand, most likely done even after Monteverdi's death, found in Vienna, is really just a skeleton of the work. We have, for a good 90% of it, nothing but a bass line and the vocal line. So all the vocal parts are intact exactly as they're found in the manuscript, right? Those note by note, we believe, came down from Monteverdi, and then the bass line, of course, as well. And then there are just these few sort of like, you know, 8-bar, really short musical, instrumental sort of non sequiturs. There's an 8-bar introduction to the piece sort of thing, and then 20 minutes later into the piece, they'll play another 8 bars or something like that. And in only 2 places does the orchestra actually play with the singers. So what this means is there's really almost no orchestral music notated in the manuscript from Monteverdi that exists for this piece. So when taking on a production like this, you have to decide, am I going to have the orchestra do anything other than these couple musical inserts? You know, 5 minutes of music in 2.5 hours is not very economical for to have any orchestra, even a student orchestra. And so you have to decide, okay, am I going to use them for more than this? What's the instrumentation going to be? And where am I going to have them play? And then where's that music going to come from? Mm-hmm. So what I had to do was we decided to keep the instrumental ensemble very small. In the few instrumental places that Monteverdi does provide in the score, he's not even specific about the instrumentation, but there are 2 treble lines. We decided to use 2 violins, 2 alto lines. We use violas, and then the bass line. So I'm having 2 cellos.
Mm-hmm.
So 6 strings. And then we're using 2 harpsichords, which probably would have been the norm also in the production in Venice at the time. So I think we're fairly close to being authentic to at least the size of the ensemble that might have existed. And then I had to, you know, work through the summer, going through the score, studying it, and deciding where do I want to add orchestral music. Mm. And then I had to compose that music. And a lot of it's composed. Some of it I adapted from an earlier edition of the score from the 1920s that I thought, okay, he has some interesting lines that he provided for sort of the piano accompaniment in the published score that this particular person did. Robert Haas was his name. And so I kind of adapted some of that and changed things harmonically a little bit to, you know, suit my liking, that sort of thing. But really, the point in doing that is not only just to give the orchestra more to do over the course of the evening, but more specifically just to add colors and illumination to, you know, important parts in the score itself.
And to support the singers probably as well.
Well, there's always that. So what one will encounter when one comes to the opera is you will have the orchestra that will play. They'll kind of punctuate things throughout the evening. And then we have 2 harpsichords with myself and Eileen Downey playing the other one. And one or both of us are playing continuously through the whole thing. So we actually are able to build up certain layers of texture in terms of the instrumentation. So at some points in time, it'll be 1 harpsichord. Other times it'll be a harpsichord and a cello, other times 2 harpsichords and a cello, and then other times the full string section. So, yeah, so we're able to create some interesting musical drama in the work that, again, is in the spirit of how these works would have been produced in the first place, but was not dictated or mandated by Monteverdi and what he left to us.
In addition to the orchestral and scoring challenges, singing this early opera by Monteverdi requires a different tone or a color than, say, singing Puccini or Mozart even. Could you talk a little bit about some of the things that the opera students have had to work on in order to present this piece in a stylistically correct way?
Absolutely. And this was one of the, I think, the greatest challenges that we knew we were going to undertake in doing this work. The piece was written in 1639, which comes well before most of the repertoire that we're used to dealing with by at least 100 years. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that any of our students had ever sung anything from this early either. Mm-hmm. And it is a very different style. There were different priorities musically in that time. With regard to opera in particular, the entire opera, it's what we say through composed. You don't necessarily have sort of set arias and things like this or material that keeps recurring. It's really all about telling a story and having language that sounds almost as if it's spoken, even though it's being sung. Mm-hmm. In fact, Caccini was the famous composer and pedagogue who invented this recitative style that we talk about, and I think he said it should be delivered in a way that one can speak musically. So everything, of course, is pitched, it's recitative, but it's all about the declamation of the text. Mm-hmm. Over melodic invention, which, you know, later when we think of opera, typically we think of, you know, Verdi and Puccini and the long, beautiful lines and extravagant arias and things like that. And that wasn't what composers were thinking about in the 1630s. They were thinking the language is first and foremost of importance and must be delivered in a very clear and understandable way. So we're not going to elongate a single syllable for, you know, 8 bars of music or something like this. It's all about delivering in a very natural and fluid and flowing sort of way. So that's kind of a challenge for music students in particular who are spending most of their time studying those arias by Puccini and Verdi and so on and so forth, to suddenly have to step into a different world and say the priority of what you're doing is actually very different. And probably more so than that is, of course, just the Italian language. Because the priority is on clear declamation of a language that isn't the first language of any of our students, that's an enormous challenge. Mm-hmm. Because you'll hear the language and the precision of the language so much more clearly in this style of music, in this recitative, than you would in your sort of your more common practice type of music. So getting a handle on Italian, I mean, that doesn't come overnight. Mm-hmm. You know, like in any educational program, we have some students who have a bit more experience in it than others, but that's also part of the fun, and that's one of the great advantages to doing a piece like this, because in terms of dealing with the Italian language, which they will do in opera for the rest of their lives, it's really an incredible, you know, test by immersion.
Definitely.
They're never going to have to work really that hard on refining a language as they do when performing something like this.
Mm-hmm. So this is sung in Italian. Will there be super titles?
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll guide everybody through the story.
For those who might be unfamiliar with Homer's Odyssey, could you give us a brief plot summary?
Well, not of the Odyssey, but of at least of the Ulysses portion of it. The Odyssey is quite long. And of course, the opera, the full title is Il Ritorno d'Ulisse in Patria, which is The Return of Ulysses to His Homeland. So it's specifically about that one episode from Homer's The Odyssey. In a nutshell, Queen Penelope, Ulysses' wife, has been waiting for the return of Ulysses. He's been off fighting the Trojan Wars for 20-some years or something, a long, long time anyway. And of course, as you'd expect, while he was gone, there are, you know, many suitors trying to convince her, of course, that he's long dead and what have you. So there's, you know, a play for her affections and, of course, for the throne. But Ulysses, of course, does return. The goddess Minerva finds Ulysses washed up on shore, tells him that Penelope is, in fact, has been faithful and is still waiting for him, and convinces him to return to court. But because there are suitors and intrigues, he should go in disguised as a beggar, which he does. And of course, he finds the three suitors. Penelope puts forth a bit of a challenge that says that only Ulysses has the strength and ability to string his bow. And so the three suitors all take turns trying. Of course, they can't do it. Mm-hmm. The beggar steps forward. Ta-da, he strings the bow, reveals who he is, kills the three suitors. What is opera without death anyway? And then they live happily ever after, he and Penelope.
Excellent. Sounds like something out of Game of Thrones, or it could be.
Well, exactly.
Will UT Opera Theater be modernizing this production in any way?
Well, I suppose we always do to some extent, in part because of the amazing video effects that Katie Tucker has done for us. She's worked on some of our productions in the past. You know, being in a place like the Carousel, It has limitations, but great creativity usually comes out of such limitations. So not being able to do what one might consider a really traditional set, we have to rely on other people's creativity. And so James Marvel, as always, has assembled a fantastic team with Katie Tucker and Talak Lopez Waterman did the lighting design for this. So visually, it's a very stunning production. But much of it relies not so much on set pieces as on these incredible video images that Katie Tucker has designed for us. So it's very modern in that kind of respect. And then in terms of costuming, I don't think any attempt was made necessarily to define the time in which the opera was being performed. You know, sometimes we'll take Mare de Figaro or right. something and uh-huh. set it on Neptune or something like that. Nothing like that has been done. But some of the costumes might, in their effort to be exotic in a certain way or to suggest something about the characters themselves, some of them look very, very modern, and others, in fact, look very, very old, and some just, well, they're all very unique and they're very stunning, so I don't want to say more than that. But you'll have elements, I would say, of it that are modern. But if your question is, have we set this in a kind of a modern world, I would say not at all. It's in a very sort of fantasy world, just as you would kind of expect it to be.
Well, Kevin, I believe that's all I have for you today. Thanks once again for coming in to talk with me and break legs with your production.
Thank you very much. Always a pleasure.
Dr. Kevin Klass, music director of the UT Opera Theater. We have been discussing their production of Monteverdi's Ulysses, which is being performed Friday, November 11th at 8 p.m. and Sunday, November 13th at both 2:30 and 8 o'clock. Performances are held in the Carousel Theater located on the UT campus next to the Clarence Brown Theater. More information is available online at the UT School of Music website, music.utk.edu, or on Facebook, search for the University of Tennessee Opera Theater.